I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. So you wanna be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rant room. We let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the rant room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, and we keep it what, everybody?
Game all day,
baby.
Yeah, on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So today, we got a dope-ass show for y'all, all my boys in the building. You did not have virus like that, did you? Broadway.
Something new every night.
Yeah, baby.
I know.
He got vocal skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rang.
I'm about to get back to it, though. It's coming. This is why we're going to talk.
Yeah.
So, let me introduce everybody, and then I'll talk about what we're going to talk about today.
Cool.
We'll start with you, seeing got you here on my left. Sean Carter Peterson, everybody. Y'all see him out there.
Hey.
Killing the game.
Commercials.
Movies.
TV.
Theater.
Wow. Yeah.
Boy got so bad. Oh. Voiceovers, yeah.
Voiceovers.
And he got vocals, too.
Yeah.
Looking like a...
And can play the piano.
Oh.
I just found that out.
Oh, you just found that out? Oh, yeah. For years.
Damn.
Well, I've known you for 20-something years, too. So that's a funny thing. Yeah.
Super talented.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Off the chain. Off the chain.
Absolutely.
Sean Carter Peterson in the building. What's up? Welcome
What's happening, Hilliard?
For the second
Hilly
time.
Hill, big bro.
Yes, indeed.
How you feeling?
I'm good, man. It's always good to see you.
It's wonderful to see you, too.
Yeah. One of the things I like about all these people at this table, everybody's consistent. Every time I see you, the same motherfucker. You know? Even though you guys have now all gained your own success, you guys are still the same motherfuckers. You know what I mean? And that to me, goddamn, black folks can't take them nowhere.
I better turn my thing.
We all make sure our phones are off.
Right. Yeah, man.
Put them on silent or some shit.
On silent or something.
I know
you're
dropping effect in there.
I know, right?
I was like, ooh.
That's new.
And then to my left, we got my man, Hansford Prince.
Yes, sir.
We go way back. How far are you going back? Way back.
Look. Way back, baby. Exactly. Yeah,
I think I was 16, 17 when we first met.
Still
had my back thumb in my mouth and shit.
San Francisco Theater, man. So, you know, I'm fresh off of that Babylon for Paramount. From Scratch, a Netflix with Zoe Saldana.
Yes, indeed. That was good.
You know, bunch of Grey's Anatomy and all that. Little character Sam Reynolds trying to get homeboy to come back, y'all. You know what I'm saying? Y'all seem to bring Sam back. You know, tell Debbie Allen to bring back Sam.
Come on, Miss Allen.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know?
Hilarious. And then the big homie, Kirk Bovo. I said it right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was practicing this shit. Don't tell nobody. Kirk Bovo, y'all, character actor out there killing the game. Also a very, very dope writer. One of the fastest writers I know in town.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, he be putting shit out.
Wow.
He
be turning shit around.
Okay.
He's known for, like, in a week, he'll have some shit.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just producer.
Gotta keep it busy.
That's right.
But dope-ass character actor. Like, every one of you guys at this table are really good at flipping between drama and comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think you get having that strong comedy, like you in particular, I can just say just in general, I know you come from that comedy, but you can be just as dramatic as you can comedy. So y'all who can't see me, I'm talking to the one and only Kareem Grimes in the building.
What's up?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Man.
Actor himself. Content creator.
Yeah.
You know, gym rat, as we said earlier.
Gym rat.
Bodybuilder.
Just talking about that.
Yoked up. Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely, man. I'm happy to be here, brother. And, you know, listen, it's this goes beyond this podcast, man. Like, I consider you as a big brother.
Yeah, man, thank you.
And you know, we've come up, man, and we've worked together,
man.
And
several times,
man.
Yeah, indeed.
And it's always been, anything you need, you hit me up, or vice versa, man. And so it's always love.
Yeah, you've never said no. Actually, I mean, one at this table has never said no to me if I asked you to do something.
Yeah,
you know, like I had Kirk audition for me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whether he got the role or not, he came.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. But that's absolutely. It's not always up to us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I at least try to make the opportunity for people.
For sure.
So here's why I wanted to have you guys here. I think I've texted this to every one of you guys that. I'm going to try to do a shorter version than I did last week on the part one version with all the females. So I've been going through this little phase where I'm like back to like, man, I kind of miss acting again. Like it's bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's when you know, brother, you need to be doing some shit.
Yeah.
Right? So I ended up having a friend of mine ask me to do a reading for a lead role in a table reading. And I did it, and it just came back like natural.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was driving home after the reading, I was in tears. And I was like, why did I stop?
Mm-hmm.
And me and Hans, we was talking about this, and I was like, I realized that 23 years ago when I stopped acting, it wasn't cool to do both.
Mm-hmm.
You could, you know what I mean? We could have Lena's and Issa doing this shit back then.
Right.
You know what I mean? And all the rest of them. I'm just mentioning them, you know.
There was no Slash.
Right.
Nah.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
No. There was three or four, you know, people who were able to do it. And usually it's like a writer, director, or something.
You had to be
like
one thing or the other, bro. Which one are you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I've been missing it. And so this was a week before Christmas. So since Christmas, I've done three more readings.
Wow.
Lead role readings, people, because once you put it out, people are like, dude, we'll come.
Yeah.
You do the shit. And I realize how many jobs I've turned down from producers who I know on TV shows, on movies. I'm like, no.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Turned down. Didn't even have to audition. Turned them down. And literally, because I was like, I've been producing. I've been, hey, what's up? Tosh just walked in the room. And so what I wanted to talk to y'all about was how did you guys, and we'll go down the line with each and every one of you, because at one point you were focused on being an actor and at some point you shifted and pivoted to now doing your own content, to producing, to going back to your music, you know, all that shit. So since I got you, let's start with you, Kareem.
It's crazy. I never stopped. That's the thing. I think because I'm born and raised here. Mm-hmm. I had a kind of like a head start, but I was just talking with somebody. I never stopped pursuing my career.
Right.
Like I didn't take no breaks.
Right.
The reason why I stayed in LA was to work on my career, and I ended up going to college here. Like I got accepted to Tuskegee, but I ended up staying here.
To
pursue my career. So I never stopped, but in between that, I've always had side hustles.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? And to be honest, I worked during a strike. I was working on Master Chef and Top Chef.
I was
in Milwaukee for like a month and a half. And then after that ended, came to LA to work on Master Chef Kids and Adults.
So
working from the strike, I just finished the job December 18th.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
And then it was just ready to go into season 6 of All American.
Okay.
So I've always kept a side hustle, period. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's just it's just in me.
Let me just ask you, how did you pivot to start doing those, your Instagram little?
I think it was just, you know, part of being around other creatives.
Mm-hmm.
And was just like, all right, you know, I can do this. And a friend of mine, Dion Lack, he was one of those guys who I looked up to who was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like being around him. He just, you know, you get around somebody and it's just like, oh, man, okay, I didn't know I was this funny because they bring it out of you. And from that point on, man, like I just got with him and just start doing little content, you know what I'm saying, here and there. And people started to, you know, to look at it and laugh, but I wanted to do stuff that was grounded and real, and not just to do anything just to get a click or a like, you know what
clickbait
I mean?
Clickbait and all that bullshit.
Exactly. It wasn't anything to where it was just like, being a buffoon or just so mm-hmm. much out of character, right. it was still grounded, mm-hmm. but in realness of like, oh yeah, I've experienced this before. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So being around him, that's how it all started, man.
Are most of those improv? You guys write it out and
no, it'll be it we'll just come up with an idea. We'll say, hey, this has happened to me. Like mm-hmm. The one that was super funny was. Being on All American, mm-hmm. you have friends who come up and was like, "Oh man, I heard you was on that little show."
Little show.
they always put that little.
It's always little
whatever,
show.
You know what I'm saying? You still got that. You still got that little role. That little show. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then they be like, "Man, if you do it, I know I can do it."
Exactly.
And it's just like what? Like I've heard. Real. Like that happened to me for real.
That's real.
Like it's a guy that always would be like, "Oh yeah." What's that little show you on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And in my man, don't call nothing little around.
Right.
You know what I mean? But that's a real thing. But we did it in a way to it was just like right. mm-hmm. we took it to a whole nother level of just like just ridiculous.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's those things that I've experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, another one where you had a family reunion, and you know, black folks, yeah. they'd be like, "Hey, won't you call Tyler Perry so he can get you on one of the movies?"
Yeah.
You'd be
right.
like,
right. Like you can just call him up.
It's just that easy. I can just call Tyler and get on that show. Yeah. Okay, I'll do that. Yeah. You know what
Why
I mean?
Ain't you
so,
on that?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's those things yeah. that I like to make fun of
right.
and create content. Around because it's hilarious yeah. and I don't think a lot of people from our perspective understand that
yeah, right that's yeah. real
you know what
yeah.
I mean
completely
so, yeah.
What about you Kirk? Now all of us the reason I'm thinking about this because all of us have been acting 20 years mm-hmm. and more, you know, when did you pivot to writing for yourself, Kirk?
Well, you know, just back up a little bit, I started late in the game. I started when I was like 47. I was a marketing
really?
Exec in the Silicon Valley.
Oh, wow.
I was in the Bay Area as a guy in Optoelectronics.
Oh, that's right. I did know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know that.
Yeah. And oh, yeah, so yeah. I was up there, but it's like watching paint dry. Mm-hmm. And I made good money. And then Joni and I, kind of about towards the end, we decided to do our own record label.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So when I was like 40, we were putting out, started an indie label, and we got stuff. We got picked up for distribution, and then we had, you know, some indie charts. We charted like number one
mm-hmm.
when I'm like 40.
Really?
And normally that's not when you're doing that,
right?
But I was using guys from Tower of Power, Earth, Wind, and Fire, guys mm-hmm. from Santana, guys up in the Bay Area. And that kind of was pushing us towards, I felt like I wanted to be in L.A., and a tech company hired me in L.A.
Mm.
And I was just...
They have this beautiful house on the hills, though.
Yeah, but I was just hating that job.
Mm.
And Joni... When we first went down, she was going to try to just pivot and do something different that time. Mm-hmm. I was still just making the money.
Right.
And she got called in to read for Trippin' on Tuesdays. They were going to do a sketch improv group mm-hmm. for Trippin' on mm-hmm. Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "You got to go do it."
Mm.
I said, "You want me to go the white guy to the all-black comedy show?" And I'm like 40-something, like 45. Right. And he's all like 22-year-old brothers and sisters. Right. He goes, "No, you kill it." And I got cast in that.
Oh, that's fun.
And one day I'm up there doing like fake spoken word. I'm doing something like, you know, I'm a black man trapped in a white man's skin with blonde hair, blue eyes, and lips that are thin. See, I can never win. And I walked off the set, off the stage. Guy walks up, he goes, "You know, you're a funny white guy because the crowd's all black." It was Robin Williams.
Oh, wow.
He was watching from the back.
What?
And I came home and I told Joni, I said, "I got to give this a shot."
Mm. Wow.
I said, because I can always do this crap, mm-hmm. like the work stuff. I go, "I just got to give it a shot." And the next week, I was actually flying to Asia. We were buying a company over there, the company I was working for. So I was doing due diligence. It's weird. I'm on the stage at the Comedy Store. And then I'm flying to Asia.
Wow.
I'm in Japan, all these places, just guys from Fujitsu and, you know, Toshiba and stuff like that mm-hmm. to buy a company. And then I came back. I told the CEO, I said, "I'm out."
Wow.
And he thought I was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 months later, I got booked my first movie role.
Mm.
And I was flying to Europe. So the first thing I ever did was in Europe.
Wow.
Premiered at Sundance in 2009. So my pivot was mm-hmm. a little bit different
right.
than most people. But the thing is Joni supported it, and I always wanted to – you just had to bet on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then – so for me, it would never stop working. And part of what Cream said, to me, when we did it,
mm-hmm.
there was no plan B.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "There's no plan B. This is what I'm going to do."
Right.
And then we all have at different times –
It don't mean you don't sacrifice.
Right. You but sacrifice. The, like, yeah, you know, what, sure. like Joni calls it right-sizing. We sold that house up in the hills.
Right.
And then we ended up buying a smaller one out at CME because mm-hmm. we were pivoting on the careers. You know, we walk on a tightrope in this business. Mm-hmm. But I thought one thing that Cream, it jumped out what Cream just said to me too. There's always going to be kind of haters in our business. Yeah. And there's always going to be people don't understand how hard it is what we do.
Right.
How incredibly hard it is we do. And I also know too how incredibly hard it is for a black male in this business. Mm-hmm. Just black people, period. People sure. of color, period. There's always mm-hmm. going to be more roles for guys that look like me.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Always. Mm-hmm. Yep. Always. And so I always like to, you know, you celebrate people's success. Mm-hmm. If Cream's working every day, I'm happy for him, man. I'm not mm-hmm. going to be hating on that. Mm-hmm. If you're working on stuff, I'm cool with that, you right. know.
And like, so, you will hit me in on Facebook or Instagram and be like, I'll see you. Right. Like, that's real. Like, that's no cap.
But, yeah. but it is funny because there's always going to be things. I always remember, kind of like what you said, there's yeah. a dude that came up to us. Joni had an acting class with him years ago when we came out here. Mm-hmm. And he sees us. He goes, oh, hey, what are you guys doing? Just acting. Mm-hmm. He goes, no, what are you really doing? Mm. I go, just acting. No, what are you really, really doing? Man, that's all I'm doing. He goes, oh, because I don't know anybody that's really make a living doing it. I go, well, wow. You don't know actors. You know exactly. what I'm saying? Exactly. And he goes, yeah, you know, but you probably got to, like, cuss in some movie or something. I go, well, it says it's in the script. See, that's why I wouldn't do it. I mean, he just kept on having a reason to hate on it. But, mm-hmm. But I think the important thing is, like, even on the writing, the thing is, I had backlash. Originally, I was writing stuff. Because I'd write a ton of black characters. Mm-hmm. Right. I had a black guy I was working with as a producer going in to pitch stuff. Mm-hmm. And he goes, man, I hate to say this, but you got too many black people in the script. I go, it's about a black family. I mean, I can make them purple, green, yellow, whatever. Right. I go, it's a black family I'm writing about, so how would there not be? Right. And it just bothered me to no end. So to me, generally on the writing side, even though I look like Elmer Fudd, my world is really black Hollywood.
It's very, okay. very black.
So it's very focused on...
you are, let me interrupt you. You are literally one of those people in Hollywood that I talk about where some people, which is why your background is so important of why you're writing certain mm-hmm. things. You literally are living with a black woman.
Right.
Her black family is your black family.
I was going to say,
the people
your wife
at your
black?
Church.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
For about 29 years.
Oh, right. Exactly. Okay.
So, and she's from the Deep South. I mean, okay. she's from like Macomb, which was like when Ground Zeroes, NAACP, where people got killed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was at a place, well, just back up with Joni's background. You think, why in the hell is she with me? But it's like, because like with Joni, you know, her parents were sharecroppers.
Mm. Oh, wow.
She grew up on basically a plantation until she was about 10 or 11. So this wasn't like 150 years
right.
ago.
Yeah, right.
She had electricity when she's like 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. You guys, some of you guys know Joni.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not talking about like another century.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but what she never did, she never let it define her. Mm-hmm. She was never going to let that racism define her. So when I write, a lot of my thought is there. Because to me, I always have felt that I know a ton of black folks, and I know a ton of black folks that are successful, mm-hmm. smart as hell, that are doctors, lawyers, actors, writers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people want to narrow it down mm-hmm. and think it's one thing. But I know it's folks are folks.
Yes.
And so, you know, people get these opportunities.
Right,
so.
Right.
Folks are folks.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Hans? Now, I know you've been acting, if not as long or longer than I've been acting since I was 12. I stopped when I was 32. I'm 53 now.
Yeah.
Brother, just look like you keep...
23 where?
You know, exactly. You know we vampires.
Yeah.
When did it switch for you to start pivoting to be your own boss more, you know, and start producing and writing and stuff like that?
Yeah, man, it's kind of a crazy little thing. Hollywood little story. Mm-hmm. So I'm at this kind of networking party mm-hmm. thing and... kind of not really feeling it, you know what I'm saying? I'm just there, and I'm like, you know, I think I had smoked one back in the days when I was smoking, doing all that. And, you know, I'm zoning out back here, and my boy sees me, and he says to everybody, hey, Hans, tell one of them stories. Hans got these crazy, great stories. Tell one of your stories, Hans. Oh. I'm like, huh?
Right.
So I told this story right here. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a acting class back in San Francisco years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So our drama teacher is leaving, and it's his birthday.
Hmm.
So everybody picks me to get his ass the birthday cake. Why me? Because they like, oh, yeah, you his boy, you know, and I think it was more from that thing. Uh-huh. Yeah, he like you his boy, get the cake.
Oh.
So I'm like, a birthday cake, damn. They gave me the money for this shit, my ass. So I'm like, man... I'm going to take this money and do some other shit with it, but I got to get a fucking cake, right? So I'm like,
he's trying to put the money.
Right. I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to get a cake. I wait till the last minute. I'm like, my boy G. Now, G is a street motherfucker, right? But G could get everything. So I was like, G, man, I need a cake. When you need it, Hans? Hey, I need it by Saturday. Cool. So, man, Saturday, 2 hours before the thing, I goes to go pick up the cake from G. I go get the cake, and I'm like, G, man, this cake looked funny. Nigga, what's up with this cake? And he was like, man, it's a weed cake.
Oh, damn.
I'm like, a weed cake? Nigga, what you give me a weed cake for? I can't get... And he said, ain't your drama teacher Danny Glover? I'm like, yeah. She was like, yeah, man, well, I heard he was,
That's hilarious.
I'm like, you heard? What is you talking about, man? I can't bring Danny Glover no weed cake. Nigga, what is you doing? So now I got 2 hours in San Francisco to try to find a damn cake.
Right.
So I go and I'm going to these places and I finally get some generic ass cake that just is a white ass cake. So I taste the cake and everybody looking at me with the stank eye like, you were supposed to get a cake to say we love you, Danny, and all that. And you got a plain ass cake. And I'm like,
no
hey,
candles.
Man.
No.
I'm like, hey, y'all, nervous. Quit giving me that damn stank and just because I got this. Danny had dignitaries and all that shit there, you know. Mm-hmm. So I gets the cake, and you know, it goes through. Danny cool with it, and you know,
it was a thought for him.
Yeah, it was a thought for him. You know, it ended up working out. So, yeah, you know, I tell the story. So, I'm going, there was a literary agent person or whatever that was there. And one of them, you might know, Cheatham, Clarence Cheatham.
Yeah.
So he was like, hey, you know, you got great stories and it's all about stories. You should write. Mm. I'm like, huh? Yeah, write me something. Write me a little script. So, I wrote a little short story, man, about, you know, this thing, this little incident I had, you know. And,
Do we have a history, Hansford? I'm sorry, what's the street?
They say write about what you know.
Write about what you know. You know, it was from, you know, a story about
Richmond,
another.
Richmond fucking around doing shit.
Yeah, it was some night I hung with,
some peoples.
Yeah, it was some crazy ass people. And shit.
I feel like I remember this. There was a hotel.
And I wish I could say homeboy name, but so they liked it, they loved it, and that led me to actually get really serious about it. And I wrote a feature, which I actually wrote a couple drafts on it. I mean, my first draft was probably about 150 pages. I mean, but you know, it was research. It's like a, you know, black cowboy thing, and I put it on your desk.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And you gave me these cool notes, and I was like, oh, okay. So those notes got me this. And here's something for people to really think about.
We told them the trim, by
you
the way.
You told me the trim, but you also gave me some little, you know, narrative things, too, that actually for character, too. So here's something that people should really think about if you're going to do this. So I had worked with an Academy Award winning director named Phil Kaufman. Phil did a movie called The Right Stuff and all this. So I worked on a movie with him, and I basically he gave me a card. Because we kind of kicked it like a, you know, hey, if you ever need something or want me card, you know, hit me up. So I could have hit him up for another role or something, and it would have been some little ass role. But I was like, nah, I'm going to use the card to hit him up to look at my script and give me some notes. So he read the script and gave me these great ass notes. And those notes took the script to a whole nother level. And now that script is at Warner Brothers.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I love that. That's a good story.
Absolutely.
What about you, Sean? Because you've always been singing along with their acting, right?
You know.
Or did that come later?
I feel like when I first moved out here at, you know, however old I was, 22.
You got that sexy voice. Look at him.
You know I'm saying when I first.
Yeah, there it is.
There was still that whole, like, you need to pick and choose what you're going to do thing, which is the main reason why I stopped my music when I first moved out here.
So you had the same issue I did.
I did. Okay. I feel, and I don't remember, I couldn't tell you who it was that told me this, but but the pervasive attitude was, you need to pick one. Yeah. You can't do everything.
Right.
Even though when I was in school, middle school, high school, college, I always did everything. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I'm in the real world now. I can't be, you know, I need to concentrate and focus. So I was just, you know, focused on being a really, really good actor. So I was taking classes. I was doing all the things you're supposed to do and working my way up from the bottom, you know, doing theater and working downtown, you know, being a data entry clerk and doing all the things that you have to do. Right. And so I didn't do any music for years, so much so that when I had friends that knew me from college and stuff, they came to visit and they realized that none of my new friends knew that I was a musician at all. Like, they had no idea. And it because I was in it, it didn't cross my mind. You know what I mean? Yeah. I had a piano at my house.
Messing with it every once in a while?
Every once in a while, I would, but something happened with one of the keys, and so playing it was just a pain. It was just like folks. You know, something happened with the key, and I didn't think at the time, get it fixed, fool. You know what I mean? I was just like, well, the key is broken, so I can't really play. You know? And so what I would do is I would help people with theater auditions from time to time. So if someone had like an audition for like Rent or something like that, I'd be like, come on over, I got you. We would work on it, and then I would send them on their way. I wasn't charging them nothing. I was just like, hey, we're just friends, you know. Whatever. And then so I didn't play for a long time, and then I started to get that thing that you were getting about, what are you doing? Like, why has it been 10 years since you've played the piano? How come you haven't played in public? How come you have a whole crew of people that don't know that you play at all?
Yeah, I don't think I remembered either.
You know, and so it was like, it wasn't until I got with my now wife. She's a singer.
Shout out to Cy Smith, y'all. Cy Smith, right. Big time superstar. Yeah,
yep. And she's great. She knew that I played, and she kind of would just nudge me a little bit. You know, why don't you play a little bit more? You
write
know,
me a song.
You know. And then we moved into our house, and I got rid of my upright piano. I gave it to a friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
And she and I bought a piano off of Craigslist. We bought a really, really beautiful, little baby grand. Mm-hmm. It's about 5'9", maybe. It's like the shortest baby grand you can get. You know what I mean?
Right.
But then I had this whole like real pretty looking instrument in my house, and I was like, well, I guess I would walk by it and I would dust it off.
She's on tour.
Exactly. She was out of town, then I would get on. I might play a little bit, tinkle, 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 and then I wouldn't play.
Yeah.
And eventually I was like, all right, this is some bullshit. You know, you're not getting any younger, and this is stupid. Like, what are you doing? You know, and people had started to be multi-hyphenates by this point in time. This is probably 6 or 7. This is maybe 2014, 13, 14 is when I really started to actually actively practice and play again.
Yeah, I would say it was about 10 years the shift happened. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
So, and I still don't sing as much as I should, even though I was singing all until I came out here.
Yeah.
Thank you. But it was like, I felt like when I got out here, nobody cared that I played piano. It was like, I feel like I tried that the first couple times I went in meetings and stuff. I played piano. They're like, oh, that's great. You know, but we really want to know, can you really act? And so I was like, well, nobody cares that I can play Chopin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They don't even care if you come from the theater.
I didn't realize either.
They
you know?
Don't give
that's
a
interesting.
Fuck.
That's the way it felt. You know
Broadway,
what I mean? Like,
who cares?
I just felt like nobody really cared. And then in terms of singing, it was like, I felt like nobody cared about musical theater out here, so I stopped singing. And then, of course, that's when they had, what's the high school show where they were singing?
High School the Musical?
Glee. Oh, Glee. Glee. Yeah, when Glee came out, I was mad.
Yeah.
I was like, shit.
Totally.
I could have been on Glee.
Yeah.
I ain't been singing, though, so now I'm not going to audition because I sound a mess. You know what I mean? Yeah. You were going to say something?
No, that's interesting because after I did Jarhead, this is when they did
Was that
Dream
your first
Girls.
Big... film that you did one of the leads in?
They did Dreamgirls and Deborah Zane was casting.
All right.
And you know, at that time I didn't sing, but they hired me to do the screen test with the actors.
Oh, wow.
I actually was screen test with.
So you're reading with
them? I was reading with what's her name? Who got the role?
Jennifer Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson.
Oh wow!
Wow.
At Universal.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And
were you giving her notes?
I wasn't giving her notes. But I was literally so at that time, it was always if you can sing and or dance, that was an extra.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's just what I came up with because I was dancing at Regina's, which is on La Brea.
Right.
So it was like that was kind of like the hub mm-hmm. of getting dancers. And yeah. if you acted, that was a plus as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, so my girl Anika was in that.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah.
Anika's from our San yeah. Francisco right. thing. Okay. She was in that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's interesting to hear that
mm-hmm.
because when I was coming up, if you were a dancer and you can act, that was good
to an extent. And I was a dancer who could act, but it mm-hmm. still was difficult for me to get past. Maybe it's this side of it though. This, let me keep it 100 with y'all, because I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that stigma
okay.
of oh, of
they
course he could
assumed
dance.
You could dance.
Okay,
you know
okay.
what I'm saying.
Okay.
But do we buy him being the
got
love
you.
Interest to
got
whoever
you.
The fuck?
Got you, got
so
got
to
you.
Me, yeah. this is why we're talking about Coleman Domingo a moment ago, which yeah. is why to me yeah, I'm yeah. so impressed with that he's able to play whatever the fuck he wants
mm-hmm.
to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so many other actors are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, know? Going back to our days in San Francisco, it's really a trip because yeah. Coleman...
I used to cut Coleman's hair.
Coleman was, you know Coleman was always a... And I'm going to say this in a way. Coleman was always a gay actor who yeah. was out yeah. and I'm gay and proud
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like we was all running. Nobody looked at Coleman as gay.
Yeah.
Or you... forgot or
as mm-hmm. soon as he turned on his characters
and all that
in.
Because yes. you didn't go oh right. yeah come because Coleman just had that thing and that right. get Coleman could play a hard ass motherfucker like
oh, yeah.
me or
yeah.
he could
mm-hmm.
but that's how
mm-hmm.
Coleman was
mm-hmm.
so I think the stigma of gay actor for some people you know meant something like
yeah.
something
right.
soft.
That's exactly
soft tone,
what it was.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is,
I had that
apply.
Thought.
Yeah, you know, and that don't apply. Mm-hmm.
Here's an interesting thing. So, I tell this story a couple times. I don't know if I said it on the show, but he and I were doing a play, probably in the late '80s, early '90s,
yeah.
or something. And we were doing the show called, I think it was called As Is. It was about this, it was one of those gay plays back in the 80s.
What was y'all at? Theater Works or?
It was one of those. It was
yeah.
one of those theaters. But we were swapping,
theater,
you know, sometimes you swap the roles.
Yeah.
Sometimes
right.
somebody's playing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I never forget, like, I would go and watch him do the role and be like, why did they cast me in this role? Number one, you remember, I used to look like I was 12.
Yeah,
you know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah,
and playing
yeah,
this role.
Yeah.
So the fact that, yeah. and he had this voice and
yeah,
he would, you know, do
right.
all this stuff. And
always.
I would be like, why am I doing this role? But he was so, you knew he was something special.
Mm.
He had that bravado,
oh,
that
yeah.
that power, mm. you know, inside
mm-hmm.
of him. And so I was never surprised as he finally, you know, moved to New York and started, you know, things
yeah.
started happening. And as things are happening for him now. But I just remember going, where I was and where he was, and it's because I just saw myself differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is where mm-hmm. I was going. And I know we're still talking about this subject. What happened was, when they gave me these roles to play in these last three projects that I've done, they were grown-up roles.
Mm-hmm.
I still was playing roles like me and you used to play
mm-hmm.
in those plays,
mm-hmm.
and we were like the homeboy or whatever the
mm-hmm.
fuck, you know what I mean? People don't know I could do that to the 100th degree.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I'm playing somebody's father. And I was
mm-hmm.
like, damn it, you're 53.
Uh-huh.
Just settle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm so used to being out here with it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then I was like, oh, I just need to.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
But so, you hear something you don't know about you. So we did an America's Most Wanted.
Oh, yeah.
And it was about this cat, 50 Field. And he
yep.
had shot a policeman in Richmond in the face.
The biggest episode ever.
Biggest episode yep. ever. He shot a... It was a big manhunt for
mm-hmm.
dude.
Mm-hmm.
So all this. So we was playing these cats, these three dudes,
mm-hmm.
me, you, and this cat named Hillary.
Hillary Martin
right?
Jones.
That's a real story. Hillary. So these cats was all from a place called the Kennedy Manor,
mm-hmm.
which was the most murderous
the
housing project in the nation.
Mm, wow.
Richmond was the most murderous place per capita at that time.
Yep.
They
that's
had more
Virginia?
Murders. And
no,
Richmond,
California.
California.
Yeah. Okay.
The Bay.
The Bay,
the Biggity Bay.
Yep.
And these cats, not Oakland, not Vallejo, Richmond.
Yeah.
And these cats was perpetrating 90% of the murders, right? So they was all, when this show came out, man, everybody in the manor had it. I lived around the corner from the Kennedy Manor. Just happened. So they already knew me. So, man, they didn't like the way that Hillary, my boy Hillary, the other cat, played the character, the lead character. It wasn't Hillary's fault. I'm just keeping it real. Yeah, that's a real ass story real here. Mm-hmm. So they was like, that nigga come to Richmond, we murdering him.
Yeah.
Tell him don't even be on site. Tell him don't even set foot in here because we popping him. We putting one in the cranium.
He's an actor. He's an actor.
And he's like, what? Oh, my God. I was like, man, you can't come to my house. You can't come here. They going to put one in the cranium. Yep. Right? So they said, you and that other motherfucker, y'all good. You cool. He can come. So
talking about me.
You that motherfucker.
Talking about you. Talking about Hilliard. Yep. So that's what your acting was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But remember, I grew up in EPA. So I was just doing my homeboys. Mm-hmm. And I never forget when we had the audition outside. I don't know if Coleman was there. We know Shamar was there.
I know. All the kids, everybody was there for that shit.
Exactly, exactly. Everybody was at this audition trying to get this role. But me and Hans knew each other. We went in together. We were like, let's go together.
You set that up.
We grabbed Hillary and the three of us improv, and they were like, oh, these three.
Yeah.
And we walked out laughing and shit. You know, people walk out laughing. Yeah. Oh, they got it. They got it.
Right, right. Exactly. That's
weird. It's always interesting to hear individual stories of guys that you guys came up with, you know, in this business. Right. And I think for me, man, it was
Who was your competition coming up?
Bumper Robinson.
Okay.
It was what's his name? The brothers, Tate.
Oh, Lorenz.
Oh, Lorenz Tate.
Yeah. I got my Lorenz stories too.
Yeah, Lorenz Tate. And then it was a time where it was Nate Parker and it was Michael B. Jordan. You know what I'm saying? These are cats that I was auditioning against a lot. You know what I mean? So it's always interesting.
What about Jovan Adepo?
He's a little younger, right?
Oh, is he a little younger?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So those are just like who I remember. And
who would usually get the part?
You know, also Taraji, me and Taraji did ER together when she played my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then fast forward, I'm working with John Singleton on Baby Boy, and boom, I'm in the room when he gives her the role.
Crazy.
You know what I mean? But it's just always interesting to hear the stories of who you guys came up with during that time, man, because it was the same thing with Samuel Jackson. Mm-hmm. He was like, "Oh, it was Denzel. Yeah. It was this." It was Fishburne. I was like, "Yo, that class right there, those cats was amazing." Right. You know what I mean? So it's just always interesting to hear, because I didn't know about Shamar, and me and Shamar worked on SWAT.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just interesting to hear that, man.
Because Angela Allen, who was one of the producers on the show, who's Debbie's, you know, niece, like, she knows that I know. So Shamar knows that we all are this whole little circle.
You.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny. What about you, Kirk? Anybody you go up against on a regular work coming up?
Well, you know, the thing is weird, because I started so late.
Right.
I'd be rolling in the room and you'd recognize everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
I come home and tell Joni. She goes, "Well, hell, they called you in." Guy from Glee or somebody who's going through all these shows.
Yeah.
But the thing is, to me, I always felt like was, you know, even she was reminded, "Well, they called you in, so you belong." Mm-hmm. And that was always the thing, you know, to have that confidence going, "Hey, man," and let it go. I mean, it's just do the thing. But I think one thing Kareem says, too, is there's some people, their trajectory is different.
Right.
Either for some of them, some have got incredible talent. Some of them, for some reason, so you just got to enjoy your own ride,
right,
and not get caught up in that comparison game, because you know there's just very, very few. They're at that level where they've got 48 projects lined up for the next 35 years, and they're all like multi-million dollar deals. So, and I think that's important. And I also think too, it's like, that you're never going to be burning bridges either, because you know, like when you said too, I'm grateful for any role. I don't care what it is, because it's such a tough business that we do.
Absolutely,
that you got to have some level of gratitude in there, because you know, people like working with people they like.
Absolutely,
and if you're the asshole on the set,
that's it. Bad news travels fast.
That's it. You know, because no one's they don't got time
for
it.
That.
If you're the one, whatever it is, you you know, you're bitching about crafties or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They remember that. Yeah, they said, we don't need that guy.
Yeah. I think it's a different time now, because back in when I was coming up, there was a lot of jackass kid actors. And, you know, as you
started with their momagers and shit.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? And even in the 20s, but I think we're at a day, we're at a different time now to where it's like, it's not going to be tolerated.
Right.
Like, it's like, next.
Yeah. You know, they can get somebody off of YouTube.
To speak on what you guys are talking about, when I did Babylon, so this is real. I did Babylon, and the first AD, Robert, goes on the mic and says, I want to let everybody know, day one, everybody know, this is a positive only set. So Damien Chazelle and Brad Pitt is letting everybody know that this is a positive only set. Right? So I'm just, I'm a positive person anyway, but I'm like, what does that mean in terms of putting it over the mic? Like, it's policy. What exactly does that mean? And as I went on, I worked on it for about 5 weeks. And people was disappearing. Like,
in the crew.
You saw someone not coming back the next day. No. Like, hey, what happened to Jonathan? Oh, yeah, you know.
They work out.
They expired. They, you know, they thing ended or whatever. They contract ended or whatever the word would be.
Right.
Because it was certain, because I guess it meant if you was talking any kind of little shit or complaining or grousing or your ass was out gone. Was out of there. I was like, so I think maybe because as soon as I said positive, I saw a lot of people here shake their head and go, so I think that's a thing now. I mean, right? They're not tolerating that anymore, right?
I don't know if it's they're saying it that way. I know I can speak on a situation. I won't say the show, but.
Right.
Something happened,
right?
And they didn't come back the next season.
Wow!
And it wasn't even a. It wasn't even.
They don't even write you out.
It was like, we're not even going to bring you back to get you the exit. It was just like,
snip, snip.
It was all.
It
was all a keystroke.
Right. Talking about the subject. So I was being interviewed with somebody the other day, and they said, "Who's your favorite person you ever worked with?" And I said, "Oh, that's really easy." I said, Blair Underwood.
Cool, man. That's a cool brother.
I still don't ever forget.
Man, it's a cool brother.
My first day on City of Angels. That's how long ago it was. I still remember it like it's nothing.
Yeah.
First day on City of Angels, you know, you come in, they walk you to your trailer, all that bullshit. And I'm sitting in my trailer, and they bring me my food. I'm like, oh, this is nice, right? I'm chilling. So I'm eating my pancakes, about to put on my outfit. Knock, knock, knock on the door. And I'm like, I just got here. I'm all in the mood. Open the door, and there's Blair. Hill, welcome to the set. And I'm like, oh, shit. And he goes, I'll be back in 5. Put your clothes on, right? And I'm going, shit. So I get on my clothes, finish my food. I come out, and he walks me around the whole set.
Wow. Vivica,
this is Hill. Hill, this is Hill. You know what I mean? Blah, 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 blah. Everybody. And I was like, that's how you run a set. That's how you run a set. You got to be the first person on that. They set the standard. So Brad probably had that standard. Is where I was going.
Number one on the call sheet.
Let me tell y'all something about that game. And I met Blair through you, because Blair would do reading for you,
that's
too.
Right. Yeah.
So check this out. Y'all talking about game. Okay, with Brad. So we doing, we're up in Simi Valley. It's cold as hell. And we doing some all-night shoots. Supposed to be. If anybody saw Babylon here, it's these all-night coke fueled parties we was doing. I was a band leader, so we playing a man and all this shit. So, man, word started getting out. What we didn't know was we filming till the sun come up. What? We didn't know that.
Are y'all in OT?
That's cool, you just didn't even know. Golden time, but what? Oh, man, it's about 1 o'clock. Man, when the sun, hours. When the sun. So, man, people went, right? So the scenes were like that. It was reflective. It was like everybody was like, people naked, people that, you know, the dancers cold. Everybody was like this, man. So the AD again, Robert, comes in on the mic. It says, okay, hey, everybody, we're going to take a break for a little bit, you know, take a break. But we wanted to let you know, Brad bought us some ice cream trucks. So we got ice cream just out. Just head to your right, go down by the craft services, and you'll see these trucks.
Right.
And go get you some ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And we was like, huh? We went down there. Brad had these three trucks.
He calls him Brad, by the way, just Brad, so y'all know.
I'm sorry. Right. Yeah. Mr. Pitt. Yeah. Mr. Pitt. Yeah. I don't know like that. Mr. Pitt.
That's his cousin. That's his cousin, you know.
He had these trucks that had every flavor and every type of ice cream you wanted.
Wow.
Each truck. 31 flavors, 100 flavors here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
European. Whatever you want to talk,
sorbet on it.
Every truck had whatever selection you want.
That's nice.
Everybody turned into kids.
Yep.
So now everybody was, it was so exciting. Everybody, you know, I got that swirl around shit you used to get from Foster.
Right.
I like that shit. That's my shit. I felt like I was back in Oakland. Everybody felt like they was back in their thing. Yeah. People was hugging each other. Coming back. Oh, man. Brad, you know, all this shit. So now,
see, that's experience. He knew
we came back, and the energy was not only because of that ice cream high, but because psychologically, everybody was like, boom.
They were uplifted again.
And that shit pumped up, and we did that. Next thing we knew, we was like, boy, the sun coming up.
Right.
Exactly.
That is what the lead, he wasn't a producer of it. Brad wasn't a producer.
Yeah.
He was the lead.
He was still top of the call sheet.
And he was top dog, top call sheet, top dog. And that's what he did.
Right.
And I still appreciate him for it. Yeah. I mean, I was cool. I was like, man, I took notes on that.
Right.
No, it's funny that you say that. I have the same experience.
With Blair?
No.
Oh, okay.
With George Clooney.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Doing ER.
Right.
He can just tell I was nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, George Clooney was the guy. ER was the show.
Yeah.
And he was an avid basketball player. So they had a basketball court in the back of the lot for him. Right. And that dude literally invited me and was like, man, let's go play a game of 21. And he was just like, man, you already here.
Right.
Yeah. Like, just relax.
Yeah.
You already got the job.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? And that's something that I've never.
He said that?
He said
I like that.
Like,
okay.
Something. And I'm talking about, this is George Clooney at the height of ER. Sexiest man alive, all that.
Yeah.
And
tell him to call me, by the way.
Right. And that dude really, like, it left such a impression on me that to this day, even the show that I'm on, I always speak to, you know, the actors that come in and even the extras because I was an extra at that point.
Facts.
And when I came up, when it was extras, they left you out with a stale box,
little
donuts,
way out.
A tin, and one heater, under one tin, you know what I'm saying? 35 people. So I know how that feels. Mm-hmm. So I always go out of my way to talk with the extras.
Yep.
And, you know, just talk with the cast and crew, period.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because that's just the impression that George Clooney set on me.
Right.
And then just also being around other big name people and how they move and how I incorporate that, you know, into
my life. I always
tell
this to actors, as I do with writers, you got to look at the culture of the set.
Yeah.
You'll see it. If you just sit back quietly without talking too much, you'll start to go, oh, the dynamic works like this. The director is running this type of set as is the top of the call sheet. You know what I mean? And you can feel it. And you just roll in. And sometimes there's a lingo that starts to happen on every set, too. Some people are joking. Some people are funny. Some people are, you know, it's tense. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
And to that, and to what you're talking about, Kareem. So, again, not to keep on the Brad Pitt thing, man, but I'm just, this was a thing, too. It's funny you say that extra. So, again, on the mic, Brad Pitt, dude, that says, we don't use the word extra. There ain't no extras on here. We have background actors, and the ADs and everyone on the set will address them as background actors.
That's important.
That's what they are.
That's important.
So we don't have extras.
Right.
And I was the extra. I guess he was for a while, and I didn't even like that thing. That feeling how I got. I was treated like what you're talking about. So on this set, the background actors were part of the ensemble, and we're treated like that by everybody. You know, they were doing an important thing in this. Yeah. And especially the people who were naked, man. I was like, wow, to them. I mean,
right.
I don't still know if I could have been. I was naked one time on stage. I'm still traumatized. And they tricked my ass into it, too.
Oh, no.
I said, hey, when am I going to be able to change? Oh, yeah, we're going to get you. When am I going? And, you know, we got the check. And I was like, when am I going to be able? Dress rehearsal. I don't know if you're going to what. So,
Yeah, man. I think it's.
Can I
it's
do it behind the scrim?
Right. Okay. Y'all going to have a thing right for me. Y'all going to have that thing.
Right.
I don't think. It was like the night of the show. Yeah. Like, don't, hey, where am I? Now, mm-hmm. I've got to be. What? My mom and them out there.
Right. Yeah. I think it's very important that we were placed in these certain situations mm-hmm. because I think it builds character for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're able to learn from it. And be able to use it in our own.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? When we get to these, you know, situations or when we get these opportunities.
Yes.
To be able to say, hey, listen, this is how I want to be able to run a set. If I'm number one or number two or even number five on the call sheet.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I think it's always a beautiful thing when we're able to be in these situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because like you said, with Brad Pitt and Blair Underwood and, you know what I'm saying?
George Clooney.
And George Clooney, you know what I'm saying? These were things that were...
little no-name people.
Just small people, but those things that left an impression on us, you know, or is part of who we are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
real. Let me ask you a quick question, Sean. Mm-hmm. I see this... those of y'all know who can't see him off-screen, whatever, off... Mike, whatever. Shut up, y'all. Who can't see, I always call him, and jokingly, I mean this because you really do in a positive way, look like a broke-ass Bob Marley.
I'll take it.
Oh, y'all should see his little movie he did. See? Little. We're trying to stop saying little, by the way. That's the thing we're trying to do. Kirk's wife, Joni, got on me last week. I must have said little 10 times. She's like, okay, let's stop. With the you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so I'm working on it. It's a bad habit. I saw that the new movie was. I knew it was coming like a year ago, but when I saw it, it still bothered me a little bit because I know how passionate you are about that project, like I am about my Sylvester project. You know what I mean? What was it like for you to see that's coming out? Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen the Bob Marley movie yet.
I think there's been some screenings.
I saw a trailer on it. It looks great. Yeah.
It looks really good.
Yeah.
Who's playing him?
Kingsley Ben-Adir. He played. He's a British brother. He played Malcolm X in One Night in Miami.
Oh yeah, dude.
He was in the.
He looks like him.
He was in the Barbie movie. So he's, you know.
I like that slide.
And he was in Marvel, too. That's why I recognize
him. See, I didn't know him from Marvel.
He did Marvel. Sam Jackson's character.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it was just this past, last year. But yeah, he's a bad guy.
Yeah, and I liked his work. So it was like, when I found out that he got the job, I was like, wow. I mean, I've been working on Bob for 13 years, 14 years.
Yeah.
And so when it came down the pipeline, I was like, are we here?
Yeah.
And I knew it was coming. I just, my gut was like, it's coming. So I'd called up my dialect coach. I had a dialect coach that I was working with over Zoom from London.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 2 months before I got the breakdown. And it was like, I called her. I was like, it's here. And so you put all your energy into something. And then when you realize, and people were like, you got to believe it. And when you believe it so hard and then it doesn't happen,
crushed.
I was crushed.
Man.
I cried a baby because it was like.
Did you even get an audition?
I did audition.
Okay.
I did get an audition.
Okay.
Thank God. Because had I not gotten an audition, that I would have burnt this whole bitch
that
down.
Part.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. I would have burnt the whole city down. Because I was like, nah, y'all motherfuckers know.
That's real.
Because they tell you to let
Sean and
know.
Rikers, y'all. Sean and Rikers.
Sean and Rikers. I'm like, yup.
Yeah.
Y'all should have called me in.
Yeah.
But when you believe it so hard to your core, and then when it doesn't happen for you, in the way that you think it should have happened, because that doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Because
this would have been the second. This is the third time I auditioned for Bob Marley.
Really? Because
they were going to do a Bob Marley movie about 4 years ago.
That's right.
And I auditioned for it, and then it just disappeared.
Right.
And then I auditioned for.
It's been the hardest movie to do. I told you, Tina Andrews was trying to do it.
For
years.
I auditioned for the Bob Marley musical in the West End.
Oh, really?
2 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And then when the movie came, so by the time the movie came, it was my third time auditioning for it.
Wow.
And it's still hard. It's hard to leave your house and see it on the buses and the posters and all those things.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, I know I'm going to see it, but I'm actually going to be out of town when the movie comes out. I'm going on a cruise with my wife. So I was like, I'm going to be on a boat.
Nice.
I ain't got to worry about it you know, for at least a week. You know what I mean? And I will see it. And like I said, I like Kingsley's work.
He's dope.
So I'm excited to see what he's going to do. But at the same time, it was like it's like that thing that I felt was going to be the thing that puts me into that echelon. It's going to be different now.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I have to stay open to whatever God is bringing to me. That's the lesson learned. It's not an easy lesson to learn. My feelings still hurt every day.
Let's shift to something that you just brought up then.
That's real, bro.
I'm loving this talk right here. And the funny thing is, this is what happened to you, but everybody's going, I've been there too.
Oh, dude. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I had the same thing.
Crazy.
You have it with the rap
Eazy-E.
Oh, really?
Yes.
For me.
For him.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you didn't tell me that. Yeah,
I remember you working on Eazy.
Yeah. Working on it.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
I saw the audition and shit you did. YouTube.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of views.
Mm-hmm. See, I can see that.
You know what I'm saying? The whole nine. Yeah. And I didn't even, at that point, I didn't get the audition, but then I was able to get the audition. So I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But once again, it was just like, I had to learn quick to be like, all right, forget it. It wasn't for you, Kareem.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I know exactly what
you think of the movie.
I thought it was cool. You know, I think Jason Mitchell did his thing.
Was it hard for you to see it?
A little bit.
I did
see it, and I was just like, all right, cool. But it was just like, at the end of the day, I have to give respect where respect is due.
Yeah.
Sure. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. His perspective and my perspective. So
the
reason why, because I had people who worked with him and lived with him personally.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in my audition, I threw out names that would just be like, if you knew, to say, he definitely is doing the work. He doing the work. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it was just like, hey, that means there's something bigger and better coming your way.
Yeah.
And that's how I had to look at it.
That was going to be my next thing I asked you guys is, not necessarily how do you deal with it, but do you believe that there's what is for you is for you, and you try to sustain that, or do sometimes you still fight against the universe, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Let me start with Kirk. We haven't heard from him in a minute.
You know what, though? It, to me, it's kind of a mixed bit, a little bit, because it is difficult. When you put in the work on something and it goes somewhere else, and generally for me, what I'll deal with, just because I started later, you know, there'll be some stuff you read for, but then there'll be like some huge name.
Mm-hmm.
And and you can't really get mad because, you know, from a producer's hat on, you go, okay, I can get Brad Pitt or I can get Kirk Bovin. Who's moving the box office?
Right.
And we'll find something
about
Kirk's
that box office.
But it's the tightrope that we walk.
Yeah.
And what we do. I think we all got in this probably not to be rich and famous. We got it because we love the art. We love creating stuff.
Except for Kareem, though.
Kareem's all about that one. But, you know, it's a business that we
fancy
do.
Fancy-ass Volkswagens and shit, you know?
It's weird. I mean, it's like last week, I was on a Zoom call with Ethan Coen.
Okay.
It's like a callback. And it was like,
wow.
And the Coen brothers, I've been trying to circle those guys for a long time. And
you would kill that.
But it was like one of those deals that go, they really like it, but you're not quite right for what that. Maybe we circle back, but you have to... At least you go. It's like, I got in a room and I shit my pants.
It
builds the building blocks because Ellen Chandler with this casting, all of a sudden she's like following me on Instagram and DMing me stuff.
You win.
So you gotta build off of that. The one thing real quick was like Alex Morris. I don't know if you know Alex. Does a lot of theater, but Alex always gave me some great advice. He had always said, "Man, you just gotta stay in line." Because eventually your turn will come. Because what's going to happen if you get frustrated, you step out of
that's a t-shirt.
There's a guy that's going to move forward and grab something. He goes, "You just got to freaking stay in the line."
Yeah.
Because, you know, because all of us work.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's not like that is the challenge, though, is to kind of let go and keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier said than done for me.
Of course.
Well, they say, put out there what you want, but don't be so myopic that you only see it one way.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And and when you're doing something like, you know, Kareem with Easy or me with Bob, when it's like it's an iconic person and you know you can kill it, but there's also all these other things that are going into play that you have no control over. But at the same time, you're like, but God, that's my thing. That's gonna make me be the thing. Oh, the guy that played Bob Marley, or the guy that played Easy, let's get him for this. You know, it wasn't the end all and be all, but it was like, I'm, you know, we're all waiting for that next step that's gonna get us, that's gonna level us up to the next level.
Because
we, you know, we've all worked so hard and we've all moved up over the years. But it's like, I feel like you hit that ceiling for where you are, and you're really trying to, you know, break that glass ceiling.
Right.
Which is the reason why I did the Bob Marley short in the first place.
Okay.
Was because I was like, I'm not.
It's an exercise too.
It was an exercise, and it was also like, I was at the time that I started working on Bob. I was one of the commercial kings in town. You know what I mean? There was like four of us that were like getting all the commercials.
All the commercials.
And we would see each other at auditions and we would, all right, you got this one? All right, I'll see you later. And it's kind of a joke, but it was like, hey, buddy, you know, oh, I got a conflict, so I won't see you there tomorrow. Oh, but I can get it, you know, kind of thing. But people didn't see me past that. And so I was getting little co-stars here and there. You know, I can be the, you know, the waiter, and, you know, on Shit My Dad Says, or I can be the cashier on whatever show, you know, which is great. But they didn't see me as, you know, I hate when people used to say to me, I know you do commercials, but do you act?
Yeah.
It's the same as saying your little thing. And I'm like, motherfucker, what you
it's
think?
It's the same thing.
You know, like, it's the same thing. But people, people not in the industry didn't have the respect for it.
Right.
And so I was like, well, I want to, I know that I can do Bob. I know I can really act, quote unquote. I come from the theater. So let me create something to put myself in this space, which is the whole, which is how I started doing all the self promotion or self-creation, because I was like, well, let me do Bob. And then once I did that, and I started to send it to people, and that's how I met Ava DuVernay. I saw her, I went to a screening of her one of her first films, and afterwards she was meeting people. I went up to her, I said, I just want to share something with you. It's a short that I did about Bob Marley. I just want to share it. She was like, sure, email it to me. And I emailed it to her, and then we became friends after that. Because she was like, okay, you have something, you know what I mean, you got something. And you know, and we were kind of just see each other as we're out and about, and she's like, what's going on with you, how are you doing, you know. And so it became like a little calling card for me for a good few years, you know what I mean.
The year it got around to me, and I was just like,
I agree.
So it worked. It did what I wanted it to do, which was
I wanted to showcase people. You look just like him. You sound like him. Like, I mean, it was dope.
But you know, there's one thing you said was important too, and you created an avenue for yourself. But at the same time, too, once you got that opportunity where there's a green light to create that relationship organically, I've always felt that that's an important thing. When someone like that level opens up that door for you, you have that opportunity to step through. That came organically like that. And I think some people sometimes be afraid of that a little bit.
They'll force it.
Or if it's the other way, if it's a forcing, you can't walk up to somebody first time you met going, hey, why don't you put me in something? Like that becomes, and I always love those opportunities. She goes, send it to me.
Then but, and like, that was it. It was simple.
But there's, sorry to interrupt you, there's something to, I say this all the time, how many of us would rather read a script or look at somebody's 10-minute short? You know what I mean? You're going to get me to look at your short way faster than me to spend 4 hours reading your script. You know what I mean? Ever wonder how to bottle up pure excitement, unbridled joy, and limitless potential in a single word? Woohoo! Woohoo Apparel is on a mission to unleash the infectious energy of woohoo onto the world. And they're doing it with undeniable style. I'm talking cool, fun designs made of soft-combed, ring-spun USA premium cotton and 50% polyester, and in sizes from small to extra-large to fit all Woohoo enthusiasts across the globe. Get your t-shirts and apparel at WoohooApparel.com and use the promo code WoohooSRR. That's capital WOOHOO, lowercase SRR. Links in the show notes. Let me ask you guys this. This is something I asked the girls last week, and I thought we could have fun with this question too. What do you think was your first, if you haven't had it yet, what was your big break? What do you think?
Man.
I'll start with you, Kareem. Do you think it was Do you think The Shift was getting to All-American, or do you think it was before that?
The Shift was All-American. Okay. I think that year, 2017, mm-hmm. I did The Mule with Clint Eastwood. Right. I'm reoccurring on SWAT.
Right.
And then, boom, I get All-American.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was only supposed to do 2 episodes on All-American.
Mm-hmm.
But the relationship
yep.
exactly.
that yep. I had with NK.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's a creator.
She's mm-hmm. the show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She was just like, which doesn't happen. She was like, oh, you get shot, but we're going to keep you around for a while. This,
cool.
is like, this is my second episode mm-hmm. supposed to be out.
Right.
You know, so I want to say it
but
was.
But you ain't dead.
I ain't dead. I definitely want to say All-American by far was the next level
mm-hmm.
of where no matter where I go mm-hmm. people call me by my character right. name
nice.
Mm-hmm. and that's no matter where I go
mm-hmm.
in Los Angeles or out of the United States or
even
in
wow, nice.
Mm-hmm. the United
that's
States
that's right, because it's on Netflix, which is
yeah,
huge
yeah, yeah,
and everybody
so,
all over the world
so it's that show that, right. that took me to that level.
You work with my girl Kareema.
Oh, that's my girl. Yeah. Listen, yeah. we got
tell Kareema hands for said hi, man.
Listen, I took Kareema out for her birthday last year, but oh, Kareema
yeah.
and I have several scenes this coming up.
Oh, nice. For real?
Oh, yeah. wow! I love Kareema.
Kareema's so cool. Great. I've been knowing yeah. her. I haven't seen her in years.
Yeah.
We went back to doing some shit on mm-hmm. Hollywood mm-hmm. and the what's that little place on the damn corner?
Hollywood and Vine?
Hollywood and not Hollywood. Hollywood and shit. Highland.
Highland.
Oh. Hollywood and mm-hmm. Highland.
Yeah, yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah.
That little place. We yeah. did some shit back there.
Yeah. Stella Adler.
Yeah.
We did.
Exactly. That's when I first met Kareema.
I will definitely yeah, let her know.
Uh-huh.
For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's dope. What about you, Kirk? I got you over there.
In some ways, I feel like I'm still chasing that. But there's been those moments. Like Robin Williams. When I got cast in Vice playing Henry Kissinger, the stuff I ended up doing
right.
that was all improv stuff in the back end. I was doing, there's some insane stuff mm-hmm. that they wanted to. That, so the thing was wild, though. That put me with Adam McKay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then with Adam McKay, then when they started doing Winning Time,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they brought me to play Donald Sterling.
Oh, that's how you
oh,
got that.
That's right.
That's
so
how you got that.
So I'll never forget.
That's
so I go, right, I roll on the set for that, and Adam's going, he's bringing me over to John C. Reilly. Going, hey, John, you know Kirk? He goes, this is the best guy in Hollywood doing these specific guys.
Right.
I'm going, that's how he's introduced me.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And then I just
that.
Go off the page
wow.
and saying, you know, for that, the white party, pool party.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that put me on the map with Adam.
Okay.
You know, like
wow.
with that. And that was a right. good one to be in there. But one thing I wanted to back up, is interesting was when Kareema was talking, it made me think maybe 8-9 years ago, Gabrielle Dennis would have like these barbecues at her house.
Mm-hmm.
Her and
mm-hmm.
Pete would have these stuff. And I'll never forget, I'm sitting there, and these are all the people hustling to get gigs. Gabrielle, Brisha Webb, mm-hmm. Nika King,
mm-hmm.
Simone Missick, mm-hmm. Dorian,
mm-hmm.
Nadine Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all people at that time just looking for the next gig.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like Simone talking to Joni, going, because Joni's doing a lot of commercials at the time too. Going, man, Joni, how you know? And it's like Simone. But mm-hmm. it was all these people that stood in that stayed in line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was because I started thinking about mm-hmm. you going, here's this group and Gabby was in support and there's all these ones yeah. Erica Ashby there all these mm-hmm. people and then all of a sudden you fast forward about 4 or 5 years and go that one's got a series that one's got a
yeah,
series
right,
that
right.
one's
right.
all
yeah.
supporting each other it yeah. wasn't like you know a haters club it was
yeah.
like they're freaking happy and
mm-hmm.
and I just make the hair stand on my arm because mm. I thought that was an amazing thing and to me sometimes it's a rarity in Hollywood but
right.
very rare
so when I look at that and when I think because I've known you for a long time mm-hmm. too is when I see people come up it's so
mm-hmm.
cool you know, for that opportunity.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah.
What about you, Hans?
I'm going to say, like, Kirk, you know, what you said earlier, like, really, that's still kind of yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of...
But there have been moments.
Of the mm-hmm. of sort of like hitting a certain plateau, I think it's probably Babylon.
Yeah.
Mm. And the reason is because, like I said, I worked on it for 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But every single day, I was with Jovan Adepo,
mm-hmm.
you know, my boy Chelvin Griffin, Lee Jun Lee, Diego Calva,
mm-hmm.
of course, Brad Pitt, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, Margot Robbie. But we were all sort of like, you know, in the same space
mm-hmm.
every day,
right.
you know, sharing thoughts and getting to know each other. Flea. Mm-hmm. Became really good friends with Flea. Yeah. So Lucas Haas. And then I developed a really, really damn good relationship with Damien Chazelle.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because Damien let me be hands. Mm-hmm. And he was like, he loved the hands part out, you know, him and Olivia.
You got to explain that to people who don't know what it means to be hands.
Yeah. So I'm hands for Prince. But, you know, I came up in Oakland and the Bay and Berkeley. Mm-hmm. So yeah, everybody shorten that to hands. Mm-hmm. And hands is, you know, is it crazy? Yeah. Hands, you should run them Strizneys. Yeah. Zabie with the real top dog.
Right.
Up in this mug, right?
Right.
It's just, it's a wonder I'm still here, right? So, yeah, you know, when Damien was like, yeah, it'd be hands. And he was like, that's why we cast you. I'm like, oh, okay. Mm. I can be like this. So, that was encouraged, and so there's a bit of, man, I don't even know how to say this, but you know, when you have that kind of thing with those
chemistry,
you feel like, you know, and Paramount know you and all that, and then you feel like you kind of in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I like absolutely that. Absolutely. Yeah. I like that. That's true. What about you, Sean?
That's a good question. I think maybe Pitch Perfect 2 was the one that I actually felt like it brought me to another level, because so many people saw that, and I did have people be like,
and it was a totally different role. That
it was
you've
a totally different
done.
Role yeah. that I had ever done, yeah. And because I'd done a bigger movie before then, I did a movie called The Host with Saoirse Ronan,
right.
And that was like 5 weeks, and I got to, you know, get to know her and a bunch of other really really wonderful actors,
right.
But nobody really saw that film. In the same way that they saw Pitch Perfect 2, being part of, like, you know, a trilogy, if you will. And then I got to work with Keegan-Michael Key, who I always loved. And so, and I didn't know that I was going to be working with him, because my agent was
most
like,
of your scenes were with him, right?
My scenes were with him and Snoop. So it was like, I got to meet Snoop and work with Snoop.
Right.
And Keegan-Michael Key, I didn't know I was working with him. And my agent was like, you working with Michael Keegan? And I was like, oh, cool, all right. And I'm thinking it's one of the, you know, improv guys. So I was like, that's cool. And then when I got to set and I looked at the thing, I was like, oh, shit. Keegan-Michael Key. So then I was nervous. Right. You know what I mean? I was oh, my God. Like, now I'm working with that guy. Right. Like, okay, I've been watching him for a while. And he's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to set, he came up to me and was like, so what's going on? Let's like just have some fun. And just he was open like that. He just brought me in, because I think he might have seen that I was like,
he saw it.
You know, because what they were doing, BTS, and this guy came up to me and was like, okay, in character, you know, tell me something about your character. And I was like, what do you say about, you know, I was just like, oh my God.
next to the improv king.
Right. And he swooped in, literally was like, and I was like, he don't like me because I look better than him or something like that. He was like, so this is my nephew. And then it was like, a brotherly love, okay, like right off the bat.
Right.
So he just got rid of all that, you know.
He yes and you, basically.
He yes and me all day long. Yeah, you know what I mean? Good. And then the process of doing, you know, it was only 2 days' work, but it just felt like.
That was only 2 days?
It was only 2 days.
You were in a lot of scenes, though.
Yeah. I had three really, really good scenes, but it was really just 2 days' work. Okay. And that, between that and the premiere, which was like, I'd gone to a premiere for The Host a couple years ago, and it was at the Cinerama Dome, and that was dope. That was my great thing for my first one, but this one was downtown at, like, you know, the Staples Center, like for real, like they had helicopters and the shit. I was like, this is crazy.
Right.
And I had people actually recognize me from that movie.
Oh, that's true.
And that was the first time in my entire life. People kind of, because I was in their houses so much through commercials, they knew. Absolutely. I was like, you're the guy that does the commercials, but that just doesn't ring the same as when they're like, you play Dax. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah, I did, by the way. You know, so, yeah, that was my first real major level up, it felt like. Okay. You know?
But one thing it made me think of one thing, too, was, and it was freaking surreal, was the premiere for Vice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy that so I could come, right? Mm-hmm. And HBO PR people grabbed me, and they said they want you, you do the carpet, then they go, but they want you backstage. They want me backstage. So I'm back there, and it's Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Sam Rockwell, Steve Carell, all these people.
Why am I here?
And then Adams introduced us all. He hit me up. There's like about 12 people, and he's talking about me. And this is mind blowing because the first time Christian came up to me at the premiere backstage, he didn't recognize me because he only saw me as Kissinger.
Mm.
He's going like, "Hey, man, I don't be an asshole or anything like that." I go, "Man, I was Kissinger." And he goes, "Holy shit, you were that guy." But I thought that was, to me, was such a surreal moment. You know, as an actor, with your peers like that, and you're looking around, I'm just leaning this way, and it's like, you know, he's there, Carell's there, and all these people. But that was like one of those super surreal, kind of out of body deal. You know, you always you strive for something like that. But to be with those guys, you're going. Another thing, too, what he did, and you mentioned it, too, on the set, like with Brad. You know, sometimes some people have, like, you know, Bell's got maybe a reputation as a hothead, but, I mean, we all have good days and bad days sometimes on set. He walks up the first day on set, and he's introduced himself to me. Like, I don't know it's him. It was super cool. You know what I mean? Like, but, I mean, just like you said, how the guy treated this, you know, the guy want to play basketball. Hey, you know, it's like, hey, how you doing? I'm Christian Bell, like that. And it just probably knowing you're getting ready to go on that set with Carell and Bill Camp and all those guys with Adam McKay. But it was there's a different way. He set that tone. And it was just a cool thing. He goes, "Hey, man." And he didn't have to do that. He could just walk by me and just looked at me going, "Don't fuck up the scene." And sat down. Then you'd be like going, "Oh, man."
Here's the interesting thing I want to say to people who don't quite know exactly what we do. From an actor's point of view, you get a role in a movie or TV show or whatever. You guys show up on the set. You sometimes don't even meet the people you're acting with until you're there. They think you guys all know each other. You don't even have but two or three little quick little rehearsals and you go. You know, there's not a lot of time. You know what I mean? So somebody has to break the ice. Somebody has to be the one to be like, "We're good. This is a safe space." You know,
and here's an example of that gone bad where sometimes, man, it don't go that way. So I told y'all, I'm not gonna go into names, but I told y'all, man. So I worked on this movie, this HBOD, with Phil Kaufman, that Phil directed, right? So we're getting ready to do this scene, and the two major stars are in the scene, me and this other cat, right? So this cat was hired as basically the comedian. He used to be a stand-up comedian to, you know, be that in the scene, right? So we're getting ready to meet, man. Ain't nobody met nobody up in this motherfucker, right? So Phil goes, "Hey, Hansford, yeah, this is blah, 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 and da 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 da." And I'm like, "What's up? What's happening?" Because I felt a vibe. They was not what we talking about here. They was like two major stars who was like, "I don't give a fuck about you, motherfuckers. Don't want to know you. I want to do the scene." They was like, "Yeah, yeah, okay." I knew it. Cat didn't pick up on that. Read the room, right? So Cat Daddy goes, and Phil goes, "Yeah, so this is blah, blah. He was my favorite comedian coming up, blah, blah, blah. This is blah, 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 blah." And he goes, "I just want to say I love your work, and I think you are so blah, blah." And one went, "Oh, fuck, come on." Blah, blah. And then the other one went, "Phil, seriously about this fucking guy? You fucking serious? Fuck." Right?
Wow.
So Phil goes, okay, well, no, it's cool, and da 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 da. So dude's like this, "Oh, shit, I fucked up."
Wow.
Right? So it's like, "No, that's cool, blah, blah, blah." So I'm like, "Come on, man, we good? That's good, we good." So, man, 3 minutes later, we was in it.
Wow.
We was in the scene. And they had their line, blah, blah, blah. Boom, 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 boom. I do my line. Da, da, da.
Froze.
Wow.
We froze like a popsicle.
Really?
And it's like, cut. And then one of the stars goes, "What the fuck is going on? What are you doing? Phil, come." And then he goes, no, I got it. Hey, that's okay. You know, trying to relax. We got it. Get some. Can we get him some water? Yeah. Hey, man, got this, baby. I got this. Da da. Wow. Do it again. Blah blah blah. Da da. Get there.
Oh, that hurts my heart.
Damn. This star almost said her name. Goes, "I got a million fucking lines in this. This son of a bitch has 4 fucking lines and can't remember them? Are you fucking serious, Phil?"
Whoa. Wow.
That made that guy feel good.
Wow. At that point, you just got to leave.
Wow.
At that point, you just got to
call it. Because the third time, it's not going to work.
It didn't work. Did they have that shit never made it into the movie, man. Oh.
So they cut the whole scene.
They cut
the whole damn scene. And it was 10 executives on the monitor.
Wow.
Around there because things had gotten.
And they was
trying to, what we going to do now? Should we, So, man, I just started riffing for myself. Really? Forgot I had the mic on and had them two starts cracking up. Mm-hmm. And that cut the tension, and then we was able to. That's why Phil gave me the "I owe you one" card. That's why I got my
"I owe you one" card.
Gotcha. To have him do my thing.
Wow!
Yeah,
that's crazy. I love
sometimes
like
it go that way.
I definitely love stories like that. Yeah, for sure.
That's dope.
For sure.
So before I let you go, we got like just about 7-8 minutes. What's next for y'all? You guys are up right now?
Yeah, so we're shooting our 6th season, which will be our syndicated season.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that's what's up.
Yeah. I know that's where that's where you want to be.
Right? Yeah.
And then
that's when you buy the next Volkswagen.
The next Volkswagen.
Okay.
Everybody can't have that stuffy next car like you.
I'm trying to buy a house, another house. And then I have a project coming on Netflix February 15th called The Vince Staples Show.
Oh, cool.
Okay. That Kenya Barris is EPN.
Oh, no. Love Kenya.
Yeah. That's
great. Anything he writes is off the chain.
Yeah. And it's limited. We shot 5 episodes, but I play the main character's uncle.
Okay.
Which is a different, this is more of a comedy. So this is definitely a comedy side that you'll see from me. And I have a project that we're almost independent that we're finishing edit.
Nice.
And we're looking to pitch it as a TV show.
Really?
Nice, man. All
right. Yeah. And what genre is that?
It's comedy.
Okay, good.
Yeah. All right.
Love it. Yeah. What about you, Kirk? What you got next?
Well, just back to the grind. Mm-hmm. You know, the strike was brutal, I think.
It was so brutal, dude.
But back to the grind. So getting good auditions and then back on the development, a bunch of scripts on there. So,
but tell people what type of writer you are. What type of things do you like to write?
Well, it's kind of a mix. I'll do like there's a lot of comedy stuff that I'll do, but I also like doing some of the ones like the emotional tie type stuff too. Like I've done stuff like A Single Black Father. I've written about years ago, like trying to raise a daughter and that kind of stuff. So there's some that are like that, and then there's one actually that I had talked before with Kevin's people, you know, that'll probably step up. That's like a dark comedy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because heart movie stuff over here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's up. What about you? Which was next for you?
Yeah, so the project that I wrote, that I was talking about, I said the thing, so like Kurt said, you know, the strike pushed some things back.
Crazy.
So, you know, we're getting our place back in line, our space at the studio, and you know, and all that. I can't talk too much about that, obviously, you know.
What about you?
I'm back on the block.
Yeah, man.
You know, like back, Kurt, back on the block, you know, auditioning. I just did a voice for a show for Netflix that should come out in the next year or so, but I don't know if I can talk about it. I don't know.
Was there something, a sitcom or something you were just on?
Yes, you can see me now on Disney Plus. Yeah. It's a TV show called Pretty Freaking Scary, a kids show, and I'm the dad, so I'm in daddy territory now.
Which was like, oh wow, okay, here we go.
But and that started
how
off.
Many, how
as,
many of those did you do?
I did 14 out of 20.
Oh, that's
so,
nice.
And it started off as 2, and then they just kept saying, "We'll have him back. Can we pin him again for an episode? Whoop, whoop, episode. So. You know, so we got a whole season. I did 14 out of 20 of that, so you can check that on that. Disney Plus.
Nice. Yep.
And I'm practicing, you know, damn near every day to piano, and I want to do a concert at some point. So.
Yeah, nice, man.
So in the meantime, while I'm, you know, on the block, I'm also on the keys. So you know, you'll see something from me soon.
That's what's up. I love it.
Good.
Why I got you? Where you at? Where can people follow you?
Sean the Maestro, S-H-A-W-N. Sean the Maestro on Instagram and on Twitter. And my website is Sean Carter Peterson.
Awesome. What about you, Hans?
Oh, Hansford Prince, Hansford Prince actor writer on Instagram, Hansford Prince on Facebook. And yeah, I'm going to be I'm kind of late to the party, you know, having my little website and everything, you know, everybody's pushing me towards that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I get closer with this film and all that, yeah. I'm going to...
Take a look at Sean's. It's interesting.
A look at Sean's for sure.
Yeah. What about you, Kirk?
Instagram be the Kirk Bovill. Facebook be Kirk Bovill. I think Twitter's Kirk Bovill. Threads. Whatever Threads is, I think it's Kirk Bovill.
So basically, you just branded your name like you're supposed to do, mm-hmm. right?
Well, you know, it's weird, though. Originally, you know, when whatever it was before, you know, if you go to change it, you can't. Originally, said Kirk Bovill. And I went, God dang it. So I can't do that. So I go, the Kirk Bovill. Like, there's people trying to take my side.
Kirk dot Bovill.
Yeah, really.
What about you, Kareem?
Kareem Grimes everywhere.
Yeah.
Literally.
That's great.
Keeping it very simple.
Yeah. I saw you on my dude show the other day, the black show. What am I forgetting?
Black in Hollywood.
Show.
We did that KBLA last week, man.
Yeah, so, I did it with them like during the strike.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was dope.
When I'm gonna see you on that Cat Williams show, man.
That's good. Me and Cat worked together a long time ago.
Cat used to be, you know, he's from that Oakland thing mm-hmm. with us, man. So mm-hmm. I've been with Cat back at Jeffries and all
I have
that.
I have a show with Cat that he agreed to do because he's good friends with Scruncho. You know Scruncho.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we wrote a show for Scruncho.
Okay, nice.
And he was going to play like the antagonist on the show.
For sure.
So if we ever get that fucking show going.
Yeah.
But it's about Scruncho's life. It's nice. The trip. Yeah, it's based on his play that he did.
Wow.
You know, yeah. Awesome. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, all of that bullshit, at Hilliard Guest. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you guys listen to. We're all over the world. Follow the show. We got a new website being built. Big shout out to Abigail and Laura for putting all that together. Special thank you to my girl Jade sitting here. My man Tosh is in here hanging out.
What's up, baby? Right on.
Exactly. Taking photos also. So they tag team back again. Look at Thank you. Lots of new shit going on. I said the website's coming. We're looking for sponsorship. So I actually was thinking about reaching out to your girl at What's the dessert? Southern Girl Desserts.
Southern Girl Desserts.
Because I want to start sponsoring like black owned shit. Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't have to be black, but it'd be nice. You know, we got a lot of people listen to the show. It could be a good thing for them.
For sure.
So anyway, we'll talk about this. Yes, the best.
Yes.
Aren't they? Now I want a sweet potato. Uh-huh. Southern Girl Desserts. Look at that. See, just shout them out. Bam. Right. Anyway, everybody joining me on the Rant Room. You guys know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Game all day,
baby.
Peace, y'all.
Peace. See what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. So you wanna be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the Rant Room. We let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.